Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. I'm now going to sing the old theme to Miracle Nutrition over the new one. Miracle, Miracle Nutrition, Miracle, Miracle Nutrition, Miracle, Miracle Nutrition, miracles can happen. Miracle, Miracle Nutrition, Miracle, Miracle Nutrition, Miracle. Whoop, I got all, it threw me off. In a society and culture, and they are two different things, a culture is something in a petri dish. Society involves rich ladies in tiaras. In a culture and society in which commerce, now what is that? I've heard that word before, like Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills on the Beverly Hillbillies, yes. In which commerce and commodification are king, then we must be careful not to give away something that could be sold. Now, to go back to that Beverly Hillbillies reference, what if Jed Clampett had given away that oil? Now, he'd be taking the food right out of his mouth because he became so wealthy that instead of wearing those tattered clothes, he could afford to buy tattered clothes. I don't know why nothing changed. But you see my point. If I have something that could feed my family and I give it away, oh my goodness, I have snatched the food out of my children's mouths. And I've had to do that. If you've ever had children, then you've had to do that to save their life on occasion. Oh no, I got to snatch the food out of my child's mouth or throat. You know, depending, maybe that grape is too big now. They used to give you a little tube, say, this is your child's windpipe. So just make sure that the grape doesn't go in, or it goes in, or it doesn't block it, or I don't know what which one. But they'd have a little tube, and you could put any food down it. Say this Vienna sausage slides right down. Say then it's all right for your toddler to swallow whole. Then just give them Vienna sausages and say, practice swallowing these whole, and then you'll be able to take any pill. My goodness, have you ever seen adults that can't take a pill? It's possible. Not everybody has the same gag reflex. That's why I don't have that many listeners. Now, listen to me. No, try anyway. Suppress it. In a culture where you have to sell everything, you know, it's could tantamount to a sin to really give something away that could be sold. So I say, why? And also people are suspicious. So why are you giving away that skin cream? You know, what's in it? Acid. See, that's the thing on Halloween. You said that one day of the year you give stuff away. People are like, what? Are there razor blades in it or poison? Because they can't conceive of that. I think all we'd have to do is change Halloween to where you charge people when they come to the door. Say, I love your costume. What are you, a ghost? No, there is a cover. And then you get what you can take all the candy that you can get in one fist. The key is I made one of those things like at the fair that, you know, the child sticks their hand through this hole in a plexiglass bin of candy. And I say, grab as much as you want, but you got to get your hand back out again. Now, one child got around it by cutting his hand off, and we had to do something about that. So we don't do that. Somebody always try to cheat. Now, what does this have to do, so-called Hardy White, with your show now that's not selling anything? Well, I would like to give away things that I think are helpful that probably could be sold. Now, how are you going to get around? How do you get around that? Oh, it's easy. I do it unassembled. So, for instance, let's say it's illegal to sell a certain car or something, or import one, but not the parts. So that's what I say. Say, oh, it's, you know, you can't have it. Maybe it's illegal to buy one of those detonator stoppers, or what, probably not, but that you blow up buildings with and stuff. But you could make one. I could sell you the parts. And then this is an old dowel, and that's the handle. Anyway, so that's how I get around it. And right now, I would like you to sit back relax, and listen to a college-level class called Miscellanea. Now, you've never seen that, right? On a college syllabus, or not syllabus, what do you call it? The list of the courses are going to have. I know that has a name. Catalog. The college course catalog, which also should have a photo of the teacher, which doesn't. So, well, this course sounds good. And then you get there and you go, oh, no. And, hello, it's me. Or something, you know. Oh, you didn't say that, you know, Quisp was going to be teaching philosophy of religion. So,
oh my goodness, another paradigm shift.
Like that. You go, no, 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 no. So there's no college course. You say miscellaneous. This college course called junk drawer. But you could call it drunk drawer. Drunk drawer is impossible to say. That would be a good sobriety test. Say, hey, you, say drunk drawer. Drunk drawer, drunk drawer, drunk drawer. But a junk drawer of knowledge, a pot party. It's pronounced potpourri, but it's spelled pot party. So that's what we're going to have, is a potpourri, kind of grab bag, junk drawer, college course. Now, why do you say college? Well, because high school, they care more about what they teach the students. By college, they're going, whatever, I don't know. And you can make up anything. Anything can be a course. We know that FMU's Kenny G, I think, teaches many courses like that. He's got one just called question mark, and then another one called, you know, F off or something, or things to do with paper hats that also relate to pop culture. So, but I'm going to do something like that as well. Here's the first thing we're going to learn about. So the Rich Brothers. So the other day I was watching this documentary on Drew Friedman, who's wonderful. And if you're my age and you've read any thing that's on paper, you've seen Drew Friedman's caricatures, and you might know him from doing sort of like stippled drawings of Shamp or one of those, or the fella from Tampa with the, why the long face? Oh, well, that's just Rondo Hatton, and that's acromegaly from World War One or something. So that kind of thing. And Drew Friedman, like, I'm going to stipple that MF-er. See, now I'm going to say, emphasize that nose. Emphasize that jutting Habsburg chin. So it's a lovely pop culture grotesques. And I was looking at that, and of course there's old Shemp, beloved Shemp that we all love and admire, and especially his visage, because it's closer to every man than, say, Errol Flynn, whose features are bland and forgettable. And then there's the Marx Brothers, which you could do a caricature of with like three lines or something. It's like, draw the Marx Brothers only using, you know, five circles and three lines or something. You could do it, and everybody would know who they are. There was a family act called the Ritz Brothers, and it was three brothers, and they were born around the same time as my grandfather, so like 1901, 1904, 1907. So it was Al, Jimmy, and Harry Ritz, and the Ritz Brothers, I feel like, pretty much started out as a dance act, added comedy, you know, and singing, and then became this great vaudeville triple threat brother act at the, just like the Marx Brothers or the Stooges, who are semi-brothers.
Except for Larry. I'm also a brother.
You are, Larry.
I fit in.
You did. So the thing about that's wonderful about the Marx Brothers and the Stooges, like I said, is that, you know, you've got Larry with the tufts of hair on the side, bald, curly, and bowl top. Old Mo, and the Ritz Brothers just look like basically Zeppo Marx, you know, just kind of handsome, and they all sort of look alike. Harry is the standout comic genius, but, you know, when you see him together, you'd be like, which one's Harry? And they were very successful and famous, don't get me wrong, but they haven't endured past their deaths. So when they were still appearing, people wanted them to get the Marx Brothers because there was still living evidence of their talent. Now that they're gone, and all that is left with people past, a lot of times in show business, is their image. Well, their image is not memorable. And so they fade, even though their collective talent, you could argue that they were better than a lot of their peers because their synchronized dancing, it was fairly amazing. It was like looking more like a Broadway show is a lot closer to theater. And isn't that wonderful? So now you know. Now, why bother to learn about them? Because even though you might not know, they had influence. So a creature can exist in evolution that we haven't discovered in the fossil record, but they might be very important as far as like their influence. Something might have happened there. There might have been some click, some mutation. And then that lizard that has human ears. No, this is not something that happened. But you'd see, you'd go, oh, that's the basically the great-grandparent of ears. The great-grandparent of ears, as read by Hardy White. Once upon a time, there was a kingdom called Ears. No, I'm not going to do that to you, but I could. Now, why were you discussing why the Rich Brothers? What is that going to tell us? Well, I want you to start thinking about images like that. I want you to start thinking about identity. And that's a wonderful start on our grab bag potpourri of learning things out of order. And I don't think there's anything wrong with kind of learning things randomly. And the internet's pretty good for that, you know. And again, I'm stealing this. I've just grabbed Kenny's syllabus. I'm not going to lie to you. But by kind of making connections yourself that others don't make for you, some of them serendipitous, you can have these wonderful adventures of discovery. How about that? You say, for instance, like geo-guessing. Have you done this? So there's these things that plop you down as a game. We'll use Google Earth to plop you down somewhere on Earth, and you can't zoom out and see the map. You got to figure out where you are, and then they give you a chance to then go to a map and guess where it is. Now, it's a wonderful thing because if you're plopped down randomly on the earth, sometimes there's nothing around. You're on a road. There's desert everywhere. Other times, you plop down in front of a sign that says, hello, welcome to the heart of Hardyville in Schmooland. And you go, oh, wow, you were at the corner of 5th and Wicky Wacky Walk Way. So that's wonderful. You know, that's great, but then what's the game, you know? If you just plop down and says, you are in Nagasaki, where the fellas chew tobacco and the women Wicky Wacky Woo. Now, why are you saying that? Well, I was just watching the other day, I was watching a Sanford and Son. And on the Sanford and Son was good old Scatman Crothers. And they were going to go to a club, and Scatman Crothers was playing the ukulele and singing songs. And old Fred Sanford, played by Red Fox, was wearing a hula skirt and dancing. And that was supposed to be their act. And it was great. It was wonderful. And it was very much like Red Fox's partnership with Slappy White. And Slappy White was his partner. They were Slappy White and Red Fox were a duo, an act. And you can Slappy made a lot of appearances in the 70s on shows and things, and often on Sanford and Son. But this was good old Scatman Crothers. And what do we know him from? Well, Scatman Crothers was on dang old Chico and the Man, and then the spinoffs, Chico and Man. No, they never had that. It was just Chico and the Man, and then Scatman Crothers was on that. And you would also know Scatman Crothers from The Shining. He's got it. He knows whether Scatman Crothers, and this is in real life too, he can look at you and say, I bet you like ice cream. And that's mine. You don't think that's mind reading, but it is. And he was also the voice of, I think he was the voice of Meadowlark Lemon in the Harlem Globetrotters. He's the Meadowlark was the chief globetrotter. I don't know if it was chief or president or the captain or whatever. And he was like, it was like Ted Healy and the Stooges. It's that for the Meadowlark, Lemon, and Globetrotters. And Meadowlark, great, you know, personality, used to perform, and don't know why they got Scatman to do the voice on the cartoon, other than, you know, it's like when they got the, there was the Jackson 5 cartoon, and they just got really bad voice actors to do it, so it sounded like the Jacksons were doing it. I think that's a great strategy. Hey, we're really a singing group. Like, you've got the job! I wish all voice acting was like that. I would love to. Hey, are you making a cartoon? I'll do some voices for you. Here's, I'm going to give you my resume right now. Here's some voices I can do.
Hey, I'm over here. No voice.
Like that. That can be one guy. And then if you have a other one, say, what if he's a kind of animal? What's a good animal? Say, civet.
Hey, I'm a civet. Don't take my butthole for perfume.
Like that. And say, okay, that's a good voice.
Hey, I'm a bit larger animal now.
Not necessarily. I've seen some baritones that were diminutive, and I've seen some larger people that got very high voices. There's no, you can't, expectations, they're fine. Have them. You should have them a little bit, you know, because it's good to sort of anticipate the future. But, oh my gosh, if you're wedded to your expectations, then I don't know what to tell you other than you should file for divorce. And I'm sorry, I know that's painful.
Well, I was just waiting until the disappointments grew up and moved out.
No, I think you should divorce the expectations that you're wedded to right now and just...
And you mean just go solo?
Yeah, you could go solo in the world. Oh my goodness. Okay, how do I fly without wings? What do you mean, without wings on you or without wings on the plane? Or I don't understand the question. Exactly. And why would you want to fly? And would you want to fly literally or metaphorically? Or I don't even know. We'll get to that later. Oh, I love all your questions. That's why you can put your hands down now. How many of you, by show of hands... I was going to say something silly about armpits. Are embarrassed that your armpits are sweaty or something like that. And know that, oh, nobody, that's good. So that's not an example of, well, that's an example of setting yourself up to have the results of your inquiry not be truthful. So if I was to say to a group of people that I knew were sweating profusely from their armpits, and we're shy, if I say, put your hand up if you're embarrassed by wet armpits, then nobody will put their hand up. Now, you're going to assume that they're not embarrassed by wet armpits. You'd be wrong. Now, moving on to the next thing. Let's all look at our... Okay, I've had it. I've had it. I've now had it. Take out a piece of paper. Take out a piece of paper. I'm sorry, I had to do that just for the rhythm of it, so you'd feel like you were in a real college class. And I remember the first time that I realized that just people in academia didn't necessarily have decent self-esteem. In fact, it was, you know, it was much like law school or something even. So that was a shock. Is there a contentment that can come with the pursuit of knowledge, Hardy? Because that's what I'm... looking for, you know, I would like to be curious. Well, here's some just tips, amateur tips. If you want pro tips, go to the pros. But I've got some good amateur tips for you. No competitive curiosity. So be curious for its own sake. But because there is such an urge or a necessity to commodify, we commodify our knowledge. And we think, if I get an idea that will help mankind and I just give it away, I'm foolish because I'm denying myself now the one thing they give me. So you get, how do I survive? Well, you survive by selling anything and everything. All right. And if you give it away and then you perish, that's on you. All right. Those are the rules. Okay. Uh-oh. I got something that'll save mankind.
Well, let's market it and sell it in an ethical way.
Let's see about that.
And then everybody who, all human beings who have $200,000.
So that's the thing. Now, does that mean that every time that you give away knowledge that can save the universe that you're a martyr? No, because sometimes it might be worthless. So that's what I'm doing. I'm giving away worthless information, but my opinion is this. I'm giving you a broken toaster. You know what that toaster has in it? A working thing. You just have to take it out. Let me see. Okay. I'm going to give you this old, it's a broken animatronic puppet from Rockefeller Explosion. But you can rip it open and get some nice servo motors that are still moving. And you can use those to make your own, you know, Hall of Comedy Legends. And so, yeah, this is Harry Ritz. Now, Harry Ritz made some very jerky, I think a Harry Ritz robot might rip itself apart, you know, because it would go, and it went, and with that, the springs would pop out, arm would fly off, because you look at the Hall of Presidents, and they're in a pirate house, cave, of damp pirate cave. Legionnaires' disease machine pirate cave. They also are moving very deliberately, and there's no... But I believe that, you know, people in real, that's what separates us from the robots, is that we can make very fast, lightning fast, Bruce Lee so fast that they can... Like if you told a robot, you know, snatch the heart out of that person's chest and then show it to them before they die. There's no way. The robot would have to put you on life support, do all these complicated things, because it would just take forever. But that's something a human could do. You know. And you can train yourself. You can train yourself to do one-fingered push-ups with not even your feet on the ground.
That's not possible.
Yet. Yet. I think it's possible. It just depends on the gravity. You don't even think about that. You don't even think about the invisible forces that keep us from realizing our dreams. And I think, what's the invisible force that keeps me from realizing my dreams? Just intelligence, looks, things like that, I think. But I can work around that. I mean, I know my ancestors didn't have them. They did fine. They didn't do fine. They got to reproductive age. That's all they have to do. That's good enough. All biological life always says, and evolution, I don't know if you know this, but it always says, hey, why let, you know, great be the enemy of good? And basically, all you have to do is just be good enough to survive. We're always saying really inaccurate things like, this creature is perfectly adapted to its environment. No, it's not. It's adapted enough, but we'll, you know, there's another axis that we're still plotting out, and we'll see how that goes, because it's a time-dependent thing. Oh, my goodness. If you're a certain size or shape, it isn't always your world. Dinosaur, I'm sorry. Oh, you beautiful thing, look at you. But now I'm a bird. You are a bird. They're called Big Bird. They just kept calling Big Bird, and I'm like, just say dinosaur. I think it's a euphemism. He's a dinosaur. It's not a big bird. Dinosaurs had feathers. Let's grow up a little bit here and everything. I think a lot of the Muppets, you say, is he technically a Muppet? You got to think for a minute, don't you? You go, oh, I don't know. Is Snookums a Muppet? You go through all these kind of Henson adjacent furries, And you think, well, what are the, I mean, if it has feet, is it a Muppet? That's what I always wondered. Because the first time I saw Kermit, I thought, oh, you know, when he was pedaling a bicycle. I mean, not the first time I saw him pop up out of something. But the first time his feet, because I'd seen his feet just dangling, and I just thought, oh, we got an FDR situation going on. And but then he is pedaling a bike, and the Muppets meet quaint folk life. I don't even know what it was. Rainbow Connection. I don't know what happens in it. Is that just the Muppet movie? That's why I don't know what happens. They forgot to put the plot in the title. Because the other ones, they go Muppets Meet Manhattan, or Muppets Meet Abbott and Costello and Frankenstein. And they meet, then they meet up with the Stooges and go to the moon and then Mars and everything. Then you know what happens. I can say, okay, I'll go see that movie. But I don't know. Like, the other day I was like, oh, Out of Sight is on. Out of Sight is on. And I watch it, and it's George Clooney. And I go, wait a minute. Out of Sight is Larry Hovitz's 60s beach blanket movie with hot rods. Larry Hovitz from, I don't know, man. Hogan's Heroes. Oh, I don't know, man. I don't care. You don't have to care. I just know that this is what I want you to do. The assignment today is you take a name, go on IMDb walkabout. How do you do that? You just start clicking. Clicking and stay in IMDb. So you go there and say, I'm going to start with, I don't know, somebody that everybody knows. What's his name? Cove, you know, the bad sensei, that guy. Start with him. He's got like 400 credits. And then you go and just make connections. And oh, I remember this guy. And blah, 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 blah. I did that the other day because I saw that Marvin Chomsky, the cousin of Noam Chomsky, had directed Wild Wild West, The Wild Wild West. So I started going to the Wild Wild West IMDb, and every actor who ever was alive at that time was on that show because they shared a studio with like Star Trek and some other things, I think. So they just moved around. And the other fascinating thing with the IMDb on Wild Wild West is you've got, you know, Conrad, the star and everything, Artemis Gordon, you know, they're in episodes and everything. And then the next 10 actors are in many, many episodes as like thug, you know, soldier. So there's people that had steady jobs just being the goons on like Star Trek or Wild Wild West. Or to me, that's just to be a working actor and say, I am an actor with many, many credits. And yet, oh, Martin Cove. And yet, you know, I might be unrecognizable. He's not unrecognizable. Unfortunately, people probably swap him. So who cares? Right? Oh, my goodness. What does it tell me, though? It tells you that there are hidden connections, that there are human interaction and influences like that, like an iceberg. Like most of it is submerged. We don't see it. A lot of connections, most, are hidden. The wires are hidden. Things are going on behind the scenes. Not everybody who's even connected or influencing is knowing that they're influencing. I think it's so funny that we call people influencers. How aspirational. Are you, though, influencing? Oh, my goodness. It's like I say, oh, you know, like Manson, influencer, for sure. You know, to what end? So I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. I'd like to figure that one out retroactively. What's some wonderful thing that happened? Let's see who influenced that. And then we can learn from that. It's wonderful, though, to go careening into an uncertain future. The only thing you know about which is that you're doomed. No, you're not. You're individually doomed, but it's wonderful to live at a time where we're collectively doomed because you just don't feel as lonely. So you say, oh, I'm going to die. And say, everybody's going to die, and it might be the same day. So that would be, so no, I want the children to live their lives out. You know, what if it's awful? Who knows? What you can, everything that you think, you can come up with a reason to think the opposite. And how do you prevent that? Well, we used to prevent it by being in constant danger. And that really keeps you from those intrusive thoughts. But what about, I'm so safe now, Hardy? Well, you have lots of room to imagine terror and dream it up. And then maybe if you've got the energy, go out and impose it on other people. So that's one of the things. Or what can I do to keep myself busy? What I do is just the constant curiosity, exploring, making connections, things. And I know that ultimately there's no purpose. I think that when I'm geo-guessing or so, you know, it goes, good job, you guessed it. Yeah, I did. You know? Because I used Google Translate on my phone, too, because I can't speak many of the languages of the world that have fun letters, what was what I call them. You know, just characters that I'm not used to. Nor can I read characters that I'm used to. For example, Polish. But I can recognize and say, that's Polish. That's the language. I could see it. I recognize it enough. It's nice to be able to do that, at least to hear a language and know which one of the languages you don't know that it is. Does that make sense? So someone's speaking, you go, that's Spanish. That's Portuguese. And I can totally tell the difference, even though I don't speak either. That's Chinese. That's Japanese. Can totally tell the difference. Don't speak either. And why is that? Well, the same way I can tell the difference between Squeeze and Elvis Costello. What are you talking about? I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I am fed up. Take out paper. Now put it away. Now take out pencils. Now do the pencil rhythm thing. And then we do that, the clap with your pencil on that. Do that on the table. Now. And then what do you beatbox? You know, it'd be wonderful to go back. If you went back in time and you were to beatbox to people that had never heard that, I don't know whether EDM, blah, that kind of, I don't know what it is, like Skrillex wobbly bass thing that you can do by sounding like a Tibetan doing throat singing. And so that's been integrated into beatboxing. Right? But what if you did that on the Gong Show in the 70s? I don't follow you. Well, they wouldn't know you were mimicking something that hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah.
So how does that work, I wonder? Like if I went back in time. You know, I always think that people have done speculative things with movies with the Beatles. You know, what if somebody else who wasn't the Beatles got access to the Beatles music? That was a movie and everything. But like what if somebody who wasn't the Stooges got access to their shtick? Like could they then use it? And I wonder if you got, you know, a certain sound or something like that. You learned how to do a thing. Like it's the 19th century and you've learned how to scat. You know? So you're showing your Victorian friends, you know, I've learned something that I would like to share with you gentlemen. It could just be like that scene in The Time Machine, you know. I'm about to show you something that you have never seen or heard or experienced before. Are you ready? I don't know how to scat, so I'm not going to... Don't do it. Don't scat, Hardy. Scat means poopy. It does. So that the same thing with scatting and poo is like you got to know how to poo for it not to be offensive. And if you could do that, if you can get it out, if you can throw poo at people and they're still like, yeah, jazz, then you know that you're doing art and not just being unnecessarily provocative. There are certain genres of art and music that purpose is just to make people feel uncomfortable, and that is so easy, and so many of us do it and don't want to, that we try to take courses or go to therapy to learn not to do it. So it's very easy. It's very easy to provoke or to annoy. But what if you wanted to do something more subtle, or as an old teacher of mine used to say, subtle? That's the old Manhattan accent. So if you want to be subtle, how do you do it? You?
No, I just want to know, can I go potty?
Yes, you may go. You may go potty. Anyone else have a question?
A mass question?
Yes, sir. Mature and returning student.
I'm admiring that your blouse.
My shirt?
Yes. Can I ask where you may I ask where you can get it? Can I ask where you may get it?
Yes, I would. I got it. I don't know. This one might have been a gift from my mom. I basically let my mother dress me well into my 50s, I think. And I don't mean she came over and said, but it was just like Christmas. I almost didn't buy a shirt until Christmas because I know my mom's going to give me like 3. I mean, how many shirts do I wear? Right? And then everybody, like T-shirts, you got a million. I thought I'd just wear one of my 500 message tees. And then I decided, you know what? Maybe I should get my own shirts or something. Maybe my taste is different. And I did notice the big difference was in sweaters, whereas my mother believes that a human should have a red one that's too small. And I disagree. And so I've bought my own sweaters. And they're more the kind, the Irish wool kind of compliment getting sweater. And I used to get kind of Snickers and things like that. But now it's better. So some things you should do for yourself, some things it's wonderful to have done for you. And I will do that a lot of times when I go in a place, they'll say, how would you like that cooked? And I'd say, that's up to the chef. And they'll say, what if the chef decides not to cook it at all? And I go, well, I still trust the chef. And say, but our chef is extremely masochistic and thoughtless and a bit of an alcoholic. And say, okay. Also, our chef is the kind of person you got to be very specific what you want. They don't want, they'll just spiral if you just say it's up to you. Okay. I don't want to tell right. Let me tell the, you know, it'd be easier if you just came back and stood there with chef and was then just very explicit about what you wanted done. Some people love freedom. Some people thrive when things are more regimented. When I was learning to write poetry, and when most people are learning to write poetry, they learn to do the rhyming kind of poetry. There once was a man named Hardy. Certain foods made him arty. He'd eat lots of beans and go on the scene, and then said Marty. Oh, what? You think you could have thought of something? I didn't. Because a poem takes time. It isn't something that one removes from one's rectum like Houdini's set of keys. It's more something that you work on, and craft. So even those rhyming things, so work on the craft. And then I learned more sophisticated poetic techniques. And I was introduced to the non-rhyming type of poetry and the possibility of having freedom to be delivered from the confines of these strict rules, having to have the thing end. And then I could perhaps convey more meaning because it wasn't dependent on a certain word sounding a certain way at a certain time. And then I had that phenomenon you get when you walk into a diner that has too many items on the menu. You go, I have now dissipated. I don't know what I want. I came in very hungry,
But now I see you have 5 different types of patty melts. And that's just on the, and that's just one page. The next page is a whole different kind of sandwich and subgenres of that sandwich. The Monte Cristo, the Count of Monte Cristo, the Crisco County, Monte Cristo County, which I don't even know what that one is. It's got, it's a Monte Cristo. It's our traditional Monte Cristo, but with bacon, jalapenos, and a map of Tennessee. And that's, oh, lovely. But that's too much. And you say, well, it's better than one of those prefix menu, right? Is that how you say it? The fixed price. It's, you just go in, you say, it's $40. Here's your 3 courses. Today, tonight, we're having chicken. I say, well, I do not eat chicken. Well, don't come by tonight. I don't know what to tell you. You know? I finally got invited to Rayo's. And you go in and say, tonight we're having bull pizzle. Oh, no, I want meatballs.
You get what you get, know what you get.
Oh, my goodness. That's not what I feel like. You feel that way with a show then, Hardy? Well, yes, because if I was customizing it, oh, my goodness.
You know what you ought to do?
What? What ought I do? I got an acquaintance back in the day. No, she's a friend, straight-up friend. I just haven't seen her in many, many years. But any time anybody would say to her, you know what you should do? She would always say, no, what should I do? And I always thought that was lovely. Because that's, and I think it changed the way that I start sentences. Now I start every sentence with, it is my feeble understanding that blah, blah, blah. And then I'll say a fact. And if anybody wants to apply that to their life, that's up to them. But I do try, I also do try to say, instead of, well, actually, it's my understanding. Because, boy, I've been burned so many times just saying wrong things. Not, I'm not always correcting people. You know, that's, that stops long before the doing it inadvertently stops. Where you say, oh, I always thought, no, you're wrong. I have an acquaintance who I really have to do that with, because if you say anything, they go, wait, wait, wait. Even if it's a, if it's a detail that's not pertinent to the story. But you'd be going like, you know, in the early 30s, Joe Penner was, wait, wait, wait. So what year? Like that kind of stuff. You go, man, I don't know. I think I'm 31, 32, I can't. I don't know. I said it in the Joe Penner voice. Oh, my goodness. I love the sound of, I love messing around with my voice. Most of it I'm smart enough to do in private. And I kind of wish a lot of other people would too, but bless them, they don't have to. But it's a good thing that there's, part of radio is that. And that's helpful to me. That's always shaped my life, because I can't imagine sitting around, just sitting around my house doing voice. And I do. Yes. Ernie Anderson talks to Joe Penner sometimes when I'm alone. And you say, well, I'd love to hear that. I don't think so. I think he'd just be concerned for me. I know so many. I'm not going to deny any love that I have. I think that's the worst quality in me, at least. Can't point a finger at others, is when people express their love to me or gratitude and I forget. And, you know, I shouldn't require to be constantly refilled just because I lost it. So let's say you give me the gift of saying I love you or you've helped me. That's like a little coin, you know. Now I can hang on to that forever. It doesn't diminish. You've given me something. If I've lost that coin and then say, nobody gives me coins, well, you need to hold on to them better. So now that I've been doing this years, you know, I have had so many waves of self-pity and frustration and bitterness that are absolute waste of time. And just me having lost my love panties that you give me. You give me that love panty, and I should be great. And I do now, you know. I don't get any love. You get, if you just look at your little, no, what you don't is you're not banking it. I don't know, and you're not spending it. You're just losing track of it. And that's the worst. Now, if you were just taking that penny and giving it away immediately, you'd probably get a penny to replace it. almost immediately. So it ain't that. So I will tell you that you don't have to repeatedly thank me if you've thanked me. And especially if you've thanked me and I forgot to write back or I got confused or something, which I do with email, and because I have an inbox that is 90% junk and tens of thousands of junk mails going back to the 90s or something. So I struggle. So, but that said, that if you have expressed gratitude, it's in there. Bing! It registered. I should have given you a receipt, but maybe I did. And the receipt says thank you. So if you've got your thank you, you got a receipt and you don't have to, we're good.
Oh, I'm not.
I think, yeah, I learned how to give gratitude long before I learned how to receive it. And I think that's funny. And it might be that way with love, even. I mean, I think I was doing what I thought was loving without being able to be loved. And that was because of my bad marriage to expectations. And when we split up, first expectations and I got separate rooms. But we still talk, you know, because of, like I said, because of we still have a lot of the disappointments of grown up and changed or out on their own. And one of them disappointing other people now, which is like your heart swells. Oh, my gosh, I passed that on. I hope I passed on something to you. I think you can still, what do you got to offer, Hari? I'm trying to think. But I think I may know what it is. It has something to do with, like, I'm learning, I'm still learning, but I have learned to be aware of myself, to have self-awareness and not become crushed and disappointed by some of that. You know, so if you ask for a clear picture of yourself and you get it, you know, no whining, and if you can use that and integrate it, it can open up the whole world to you. If you don't say, you know, I want to see myself clearly, and you go, oh my God, because it can be like that. And then you think, well, see, you know, but I've been loved and I've been appreciated and I'm not going to discount that. I mean, I'm tired of it. And it's so weird that I think I don't want to miss City, a band, but I think Royal Crescent Mob, everybody's from Cleveland, so you can't really go wrong saying Cleveland. So I'm going to say Cleveland. But I saw RC Ma play in Tallahassee in a venue that was too large. And then on top of that, it was like bad weather or something. So this wonderful high-energy band that I love came to a venue, played for, oh, gosh, not very many people. And there was a balcony, and some of us were up there. So they couldn't even see, like, there was, to them, it was a virtually empty room. And they brought it. Like, still, it was so great. I was like, man, that's it. I mean, they got plenty of love. It isn't, it wasn't like that always. It was just our dumb town is sleepy. And so, oh, man, I'm going to stay in tonight. I've lived in small towns my whole life and getting people to come out. Got a big show out there tonight. I don't know, man. You live next door. I don't know. Maybe I'll get over. All right. I'm just going to stay in, get high. All right. I love you. But so that inspired me. And I thought, you know, the art's the art. You know, bring it. Share it. Share it full vibe. Because, you know, they did the right thing. Because here I am still talking about it 20 years, 30 years later or something. I think that's cool, right? 25. I don't know how many. I don't know when things happen. 30 years ago? Oh, it all goes by. So it goes by slow and fast at the same time. How's that possible? Time. Wonderful thing. I'd like to talk more about it, but I don't understand it. And I've made a serious study of it, as serious as I can make. You know, a lot of times you'll get questions and you go, I would love to answer your questions. First, to go out and learn physics. You say, well, wait, I don't know that I can. Well, pick another question. So, really, Hardy? Listen. If you go to do a job, let's say, you know, and you want a question answered, and the only way to answer it is like you need to study physics or something, you go, well, can I use what I already have, which is like intuitive art? Can I use poetry to solve it? You go, well, it won't give the same result. It won't be, you know what I'm saying? Like, it might be satisfying to you, but it might not give the, don't expect that they're equals in any way, I say. So why don't you apply some of those techniques to things that are more unsolvable? What are you saying exactly? What I'm saying exactly is I really don't need some imaginative person's personal description of the universe, its history, its origin, and its purpose, really. I'm content to mostly not know and to have people vigorously exploring and trying to come up with something. Until then, I will just float around in the wonderful not knowingness that I accept. Oh, really the only thing. I came down to it. I said, come on, you distill it. Here's my distillation of my interaction with you. It isn't about information. It's got to be about feelings. It has to be about, that's the only thing I've made my life about, really. So how you doing? You know, can I help?
Oh, I don't know. Can I help you?
Yes. It's a way of getting help, too. And I think that's where I am. I'm sure that you're far beyond that and are exploring things like, you know, is any of this real? But I think at the end of the day, it's I would really love to have that. What am I struggling for words suddenly? And there's a good reason for that. Because I have bumped up into a wall. It's just like the Truman Show. I have met the limitations of words, of description, of making something concrete. And I can only sort of meander around the land and the environment that I'm really heading into, which is just those feelings, and we don't know why, and we're floating and swimming in them, and they may have real concrete reasons that they're going on, but the effects. I guess what I'm saying is I acknowledge that you are sad. I acknowledge that your sadness reaches the levels of excruciating pain. I realize that you have physical pain. I realize that your physical pain sometimes is unimaginable and unendurable, and that you endure anyway. I realize that some of you have responsibilities to others, that you are caretakers, that you have put your life on hold to care for others, and it feels as if life is thankless sometimes. And I'm telling you that you're acknowledged and that you're loved, and that even if you don't hear it, it's out here. It's how we can't all see and know one another. And you just need to hear it, even from a stranger, that I absolutely know what this involves, being a human. And it's unbelievably difficult, and it is unfathomably confusing. And words like unfathomably are almost impossible to say if you've have allergies and your tongue is slightly, not swollen, but I notice that during the winter, there's just sometimes I can't speak at all. I look back at a video I had done when I was having like some kind of allergy attack, and I guess my tongue had swollen, and I really hadn't realized it yet, and because I had been setting things up. And then I went to speak, and I said, you know, hey, everybody, it's good to see you guys. Like, it's still up there on the internet somewhere. See if you can find it. But that's what life is. One day that tongue works, next day it doesn't, maybe. And So what is your remedy? My remedy is that we have this ability. I don't know what it is, through just because all human lives are so similar and our feelings are actually so similar, that maybe I could inject some joy or some temporary relief or some distraction. You know, this show is often that for me. I sit down at this microphone and the past disappears and the future disappears. And if I'm in the middle of some struggle, and I often am, it falls away for a minute because you and I are together. I just lose myself in you. And think about it for a minute. It's just the idea of you. And that's almost enough, too, to draw myself outside of myself. And we all come together, all us listeners on this radio, and we form something else. And we're not sure it's real, but I assure you it is. That connection we're all feeling. It's the strangest thing, being a radio talker as opposed to somebody who speaks in front of large audiences. And the difference is this. I speak in front of an audience that would fill a pretty good-sized theater, but mostly you're all alone. It's like a theater where you're all in different rooms all over the place. But that doesn't mean that collectively you don't feel something. Now, I want you to imagine those people. Just to do a thought experiment. Say, I'm imagining others listening to Hardy at the same time I am. And maybe if I'm feeling something good, they're feeling it too. And if Hardy's acknowledging my struggle, maybe they are too. And they are. So if I could just be a conduit for them, if I could just be the voice of others that are sitting in their rooms, I got to tell you, you are valued. You don't know me. That makes it even, I'm even more sure because I don't know you. Because my pride or my own low self-esteem is not coming into it. So should I meet you, all right, I might not be as honest because there might be something, about me that I misperceive. But not knowing you, just knowing something that you value, I can absolutely, without contradiction, say that you are needed as much as I am. And you are totally lovable. I don't care who you are, you know. Also, let's be aware that I'm being aspirational for you. So I'm not lovable. Well, then be it. Be lovable then. I don't know. My goodness, this is not advice. This is potpourri. Like I said, I'm giving you. This isn't a bouquet. No, it's been chopped up and put in some burlap to stick in your underwear drawer. It was, but now it's all dried out and I've crushed it up. It still does something. I just wanted to perfume your day a little bit. I guess that's what it is. I want to freshen up your panties with some lavender smell. That's nice. I didn't talk about any fragrances today. Even though I'm pretty taken with methyl ionone gamma. And then how, if you put it next to cedar, it smells like leather. When really it's supposed to be like a violet smell. I don't get it. Wonderful how the world works. Oh, my friends, I will do another smell show. I got the most feedback about that, and I need to email Bronwyn too. It'd be nice to talk to an old friend. Oh, I bless you so much for listening to me. This is Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County, New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org. Worldwide, all over the place. My gosh, any time that we can be together is a wonderful time for me. Thank you and bless you so much for being with me in this show. Like I said, I am Hardy White. I'm available to you. You can email me, or you can scream out your window, scream my name out your window. And that might be a fun thing to do. Or just go around saying shemp jive to people for no reason. A friend of mine had never heard anybody say, because when I was performing, everybody went, Greg went shemp jive, and everybody went shemp jive back. And this friend thought, are y'all religious? I go, in a way. All right, I love you so much. I'll see you again next week.
name is Ebony. Her name is Mahogany. Twins' 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 name is Ebony. Mahogany. Twins' name is Ebony. Her name is Mahogany. Twins' name is Ebony. Her name is Mahogany. Twins' name is Ebony. Her name is Mahogany. Twins' name is Ebony.
Thank you.